And hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Letters. We received a letter from one of our listeners. And we have a lot of good listeners. But this from Kimberly. My meditation for today is on taking care of ourselves. No one likes a martyr. And I thought about that. No one likes a martyr. Excuse me just a second, friends. Be right back with you. Hang on. Here we go. Everything is back. Oh, the sacrifices I make for my audience. Nobody likes a martyr. How do we feel about martyrs? Guilty, angry, trapped, negative, and anxious to get away. Somehow, many of us have developed a belief that depriving ourselves, not taking care of ourselves, being a victim, and suffering needlessly will get us what we want. So that's the belief that many people have. What is a martyr? The question I have is I want to look at it a little deeper. I'm not so sure martyrs are martyrs, number one. I'm not sure what it is. I don't think either of you, and they've got some bad names. A martyr in Greek. Originally, the word is somebody who suffers persecution and death for refusing to renounce or accept a belief or cause, usually religious. Now, the word originally meant witness. A martyr was a witness. The process of bearing witness was not intended to leading to death. Although it's known from the ancient writers in the Old Testament, witnesses often died after their testimony, but it was about a witness to truth. So a martyr was originally a witness to truth. Think of Gandhi. You know, he's a witness to truth, whether he died or not died for his belief. During the early Christian centuries, it had an extended meaning, and it would mean that if you died for, say, your truth, it was called martyrdom. Now, we bring this because I want you to think about your own life and the own people in your life, which Jana, who's in the studio with us today, reminds me that there are many martyrs at Christmas time. Many martyrs, and that's what you see all around you. And it puts a little pall on the celebration when you see your grandmother sacrificing herself and dragging herself around, and your mother looks like she's just about to have a heart attack because she's trying to get the souffle on the table. So you have to think about martyrdom. I think martyrdom is an attempt to reach a higher self. Now I'm going to take a long way around that to get you to that place. An attempt to reach a higher self. Well, if you think about it religiously, that kind of makes sense, right? Let's look at Judaism. Well, we know about Catholicism, right? In Judaism, here were the common features of a stereotypic martyr, right? Number one, they were a hero, a person of some renown who's devoted to a cause, believed to be admirable. So if you're devoted to a cause to be admirable, and you're a hero. Number two, you have to have opposition to that cause, right? Number three, you foresee by action of the opponents to harm him or her because of your commitment to the cause. So let's say some naturalist healers, right? They say, hey, I'm going to teach nutrition. And then they realize, hey, wait a minute, what I'm doing is right. I really believe in what I'm doing. I'm devoted to the cause of natural healing. And hey, I'm opposed by the FDA, by the MMA and IRT. And then you see foreseeable risk. You know, if I continue talking like this, they're going to come after me. They're going to take away my license. They're going to strip me of whatever I have. And then you have the courage and commitment. The hero continues, despite knowing the risk of commitment to the cause. So now I know if I keep doing this, I'm going to do it anyway. Now, with the real martyrs, the ones that include death, the opponents kill the hero because of his or her commitment to the cause, and there's usually an audience response, which is a group of people who, in the death when it's commemorated, they label the heroes explicitly as a martyr. Other people may turn to be inspired to pursue the same cause because they have the martyr. So conditions of martyrdom. Now, I want you to think of these in relationship to your own life as well. If you have something you believe in, you believe in your children. You believe that you have to bring them up a certain way. The schools tell you, no, you have to circumcise them, inject them, and then you have to have them trained in a certain way. And you as a parent say, not my kids, please. Well, we're not going to like you if you do it your way. Well, that's all right. You could not like me, but I am going to take care of my children my way. So is this so bad? Right? It sounds pretty good. Then they come after you and they say, we're going to take away your rights to go to special classes. And you'll say, okay, but I'm still going to take care of my kids my way. And then you do fine. And when your kids grow up, you say, you know what I gave up in order to have you? Then you're not doing so fine. See, it's at that last point where the martyr kind of separates themselves. Let's go on to a little religious hunt here. Where does it come from? Judaism. Not that anything should be bad about Judaism, but Judaism is based on martyrdom. It's like the basis of it. You know, originally, there was struggles in Greece, the Hellenistic Judaism. They had to sacrifice so much, and they fought so much, and they were persecuted. And everywhere you go, they were persecuted. And they finally, you know, they got to the idea, well, they're being executed. And the crimes that they committed were refusing to eat pork, right? This is a crime. We'll kill you for that one. Or if you're going to have, you know, circumcise your kids, right? That's a crime. We're gonna kill you for that one. And Judaism was itself a religion of martyrdom. And this inspired Christian martyrdom. See, Judaism was first. In Christianity, in accordance with the meaning of the original Greek martyrs, is one who brings a testimony, usually written or verbal. And this is the word of God. Now the Catholics come along, the Christians come along. I got the word of God. Right? And somebody says, oh, no, you don't. If you got the word of God, then we don't have the word of God. So you better not have the word of God. And the guy said, but I do have the word of God. Here I am. And he said, I'll hit you with a stick if you keep saying it. And you say, well, go hit me with the stick because I really believe in what I'm doing. And then they kill you and you become a martyr. The first martyr, according to Christianity, was Jesus. And that was pretty big martyring, you know, up there on the cross. That was a big deal. That was like really showing it. Now, in the context of church history, from the time of persecution of early Christians in the Roman Empire, it developed that a martyr was one who was killed for maintaining a religious belief, knowing that this belief will knock you out, that you're going to have to make certainly result in some kind of problem. So now let's move on to the people we know who are martyrs. Are they believers? Are they trying to tell the truth? Why are they trying to tell the truth? Maybe we better examine the other religions. In Islam, a martyr is termed shaheed. Now, shaheed, it comes about in a lot of places, but believed to remain alive, anyone taking witness over worldly events without taking part of them. Now, that's a little confusing thing because in shaheed, a martyr may die as a consequence of fighting, But a shaheed exchanges himself for the divine and becomes divine by speaking the truth of the divine. Now, this is therefore you could lay yourself down. It's considered one of these ways of becoming God by telling the God truth. It may not be true, you know, may or may not be true, but if you told nutrition, Hinduism, despite the promotion of this thing called Ahimsa, Ahimsa, which was nonviolence within the Dharma, there was also the concept of righteous, where violence is used in Hinduism as a last result over all other means have failed. So violence was used, but during the Great War which commenced, they were brought down with a double attachment, and this is where Krishna instructs Arjuna how to carry out his duty as a righteous warrior and fight. And he's told to fight. So the warrior fights back, not so much a martyr. What is Joan of Arc a martyr? What do you think? I mean, don't we think of Joan of Arc as a real martyr? Was she carrying on the message of what?
I'm not sure what message that Joan of Arc carried, but we have the Baha'i faith that tells us that there were many messengers that came along, Jesus being one of them, Muhammad being another one, Joan of Arc being another one, and that they all come to us as messengers, and that in that messenger, whether they die or not, that they are known as a martyr. So the Baha'i faith looks at a more broad scope, and the founder, actually, of the Baha'i faith said he discouraged the literal meaning of sacrificing one's life, so that one doesn't necessarily have to die in order to be a martyr, but that it's basically someone who devotes oneself to service in humanity. And that each of our messengers, Muhammad and Jesus, came at a timely fashion to encourage us to elevate humanity in that sense of martyrdom.
So wherever we're going to look, Linda, we're going to find martyrs.
Mm-hmm.
People who are fighting for what they believe is true and are willing to sacrifice themselves. Then why do we have such a pejorative on the word martyrdom? Don't be such a martyr. Right? So that's what we're going to get to today, my friends. This is Armando Miller, Linda Vanella, and John Valerio here with you. Here are some of the historic famous martyrs, in case you didn't know. Hussein ibn Ali, the son of Ali, at the Battle of Karbala. Jesus, son of Mary. Socrates was put to death for his belief. There are the 10 martyrs of Judaism. And then it kind of skips all along to a whole bunch of names I don't know. But you know which the one martyr of our lifetime was? That's right, MLK. Martin Luther King is seen as a martyr. Close look at Martin Luther King's life brings it into question. You know, was he really, was he not? But he is our living martyr. He's a living or dying martyr. He's one of our time. Okay. So we bring this up because we want to look closely at it. Because I believe that martyrdom is an attempt to become part of a higher self. What does that mean? If you don't feel like a higher self, but you know of a higher self, then you may want to be part of a higher self. Let's say you don't know anything about a higher self, and you just say, hey, you know, I'll do what I do, and I live my life, and I'll retire on my full pension benefits, and that's how I'm going to live my life. And you don't know of anything higher than that, bigger than that. You don't believe, you believe God is there, but, you know, you're not so sure. Well, that's it. You settle for less. You're not a martyr. You're not a martyr. You're not sacrificing anything. You're just not a martyr. But let's say you get a glimpse of something spectacular, something big, something huge, something that feels better than your normal mundane life. And you say, ooh, see this little crucifix? When I feel it, I get warmth inside my body. So maybe I'll learn about this. Maybe I'll become a crucifixioner, you know, and I'll carry the crucifix around or a cross around or whatever, the Star of David, whatever I'm going to carry. Maybe I'll talk about it to other people. hey, other people are going to hit me with a brick. But if I really believe this, I'm going to try to teach it. That's one level of martyrdom, if you believe something is bigger. Now, let's say it's just about, I want to join something larger than me. You're going to ask me, how does this make your grandmother a martyr? It does. I'll lead you there, I promise. Or I'll guide you there, I promise. You can lead a horse to water, but a pencil must be led. Okay, let's see how I'm going to take you there. In psychology, a person who has a martyr complex, sometimes associated with the word victim complex, desires the feeling of being a martyr for his or her own sake, seeking out suffering or persecution because it feeds a psychological need. Now, what about this? What about you want to feel suffering or persecution? Last week we did a program on paranoid schizophrenia. When we're talking about paranoid schizophrenia, we talked about the three different types of paranoia, and we talked about one of them being the persecutory one. Persecution does something for you. What does persecution do for you? Show me the good side of persecution, because this is the positive mind. What's the good side of being persecuted? Well, number one is you're important. If you're not important, then you don't get persecuted by anybody. If you're not significant, nobody's going to persecute you. They persecute you because somehow you're important to somebody else. Otherwise, they wouldn't be looking at you. So being persecuted has got a kind of a thing to it. Hey, I'm important, number one. I'm not non-existent. Now, remember the original concept here is that martyrdom is an attempt to become part of something bigger. In this particular case, being persecuted is an attempt to become part of something bigger. Because if you're just a person who's not being persecuted, you're probably somebody who nobody thinks about at all. And if nobody thinks about you, you want to be part of the bigger world, develop these delusions. Now, they're called persecutory delusions. It's a condition in which an affected person believes they are being persecuted. They think that harm is occurring and it's going to occur, the things that the persecutor has the intention to harm them, and they invent, create, and perpetuate this belief. It feels bad to be persecuted. You feel all scrunched up. You feel frightened. You feel wary. You feel alert. You feel angry. Would you rather feel that or numb? Well, a lot of people choose for, I'd rather feel angry and miserable than feel numb, because numb, you kind of disappear. You don't even know you're there. In some systems, this belief is that you've been singled out for persecution because of your exceptional abilities or your exceptional integrities. So in psychology, sometimes people invent themselves as martyrs because along with it, they invent with themselves this incredible, exceptional ability of integrity. Let's say your integrity, and I've seen this happen a number of times, is that you believe roads should not be paved because it's destroying the breath of the inner earth, and that the earth needs to breathe, and you believe this. So cobblestone is the best way. And you believe that nothing should be paved, and so you lay yourself down on the ground when they're paving the ground, and you stop them, and you say, no, I can't let you do this. This is a horrible thing. See, on some level, you truly believe this. And you let your mind really believe this is a true thing. And so you become persecuted for your integrity. What is your integrity? My integrity is that I believe in something. A guy named Paul Johnson, who was a theologian, considered such belief a topic of concern for the mental health of, believe it or not, the clergy. He was always concerned about the clergy. He said that the clergy tend to see themselves as martyrs, that they're sacrificing something for the greater good. He believed that martyr complexes involve willful suffering in the name of love and duty. And then, of course, we know that once you feel like you are willfully being sacrificed or sacrificing yourself, it entitles you to do things that may not be entitled to do usually. So abuses that come out of the clergy make sense. Somebody says, I'm such a sacrifice where I'm allowed to do anything. So for some people, martyrdom is considered a form of masochism. So you want to induce some pain, right? Okay. So we're back to this question of, is sacrificing yourself a bad thing? Now I bring you back to your original struggle. When there is fertilization, how many sperm does it take for one egg? Who knows the answer?
4 million.
4 million, right? That's from your family. My family, I think it was 3 million. Let's say 4 million sperm, just for the sake of kid, in one thing, right? In one deposit. So if you somehow wound up being the one out of 4 million, because you had to be, what happened to the other 399,999,999 sperm? What happened to them? What happened to them? Did they just die? Yes, they just died. How did they die? You see, according to what happened, if you look it up closely, and you shouldn't be looking that closely anyway, but if you are looking closely, what you see is when a sperm dies, it becomes part of the wall on which the other sperm climb. So you give up you're done, right? You can't make it. You lay flat against the wall and you die. It takes a couple of seconds to die and you die. And the other sperm climb on top of you. And then those die and then the other sperm climbs on top of that. And then finally one of them, you, say, there's my egg. I'm going to get my egg. So in order for you to be born, 3,999,999 guys had to be martyred. They had to give up their lives. Is that a bad thing? We're born from that. Now, there are people who believe that they want to show you from the bottom of their hearts how good they are. And they give, and they give, and they give, and they give. There's nothing wrong with that, my friends. If you know martyrs, it's fine. Let them be martyrs. The problem with martyrdom is that it strikes home a thing in you. Somehow, when the martyrdom is done in a certain way, it touches a spot in you called guilt. When you get guilty around a martyr, then the game is in order. See, now we have the game going. Now we have the sacrifice for a reason. What do I care? If you want to sacrifice yourself for me, go ahead. Right? If you had to travel from somewhere in the south of the Bronx in order to bring me, south of the Bronx, from the south of Brooklyn in order to bring me something that I wanted and it took a lot of effort, you had to take 3 trains and you were cold and you came up here because you wanted me to have a piece of apple pie. And you were all the way, and you did this whole thing, and you dropped it off with the person at the front desk, and you went away. That's fine. Thank you so much. You wanted to do it. You wanted to make that effort. You wanted to make that delivery. If I get it, and then I see in it all the stuff that you did to get here, I will still say thank you, because I knew you wanted to do this. I look at you as being the person who wants to make this sacrifice, not me, that you're doing it for. See, we want to look at it. So I know, example, I know a man who at Christmas time gives lavish, lavish gifts. And this woman who knows him gives no gifts at all, or very small gifts. And she said to him once, after he delivered like the 14th gift, she said, I know you have a need to do this, so I allow you to give me the gifts. I even show you appreciation because I know it's important to you, but it doesn't in any way make me feel like I have to do it. That's cool. Do you ever get that feeling at Christmas time when you get a Christmas card? You get a holiday card. Oh, now I better send out a card right away. You know, oh, I have to do it right away. Or are you free? Are you free enough to receive without feeling like you have to give back? That's a question. So what makes a martyr is somebody who decides to make sacrifices for something they believe in. Maybe it's you they believe in. Maybe it's your happiness they believe in, and they want to make sacrifices for it. But you see, it behooves them, it makes them bigger to feel good about doing something for you. But it's not because they are sacrificing, it's because it's selfish. Selfish is in the word S-E-F-H, S-E-L-F-P-H, self, as in it's for the self. Not that it's bad, I just want to feel good about myself. So I got to buy my kids presents. I want to feel good about myself, so I want to take my mother out to dinner. Things like that that you do that you may not like doing, but you do because some part of you feels better. Well, that's a little martyrdom on your part, but you don't have to tell anybody about it. When you expect that people recognize this and want to come back to you with more stuff, you know, and say, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, oh, my gratitude, that's a different story. That's where you get caught in the trap. It's not the punishment. This was Jean-Paul Sartre said, everything has been figured out except how to live. That's what he said. And St. Augustine said, it's not the punishment, but the cause that makes the martyr. It's not that they were killed. What makes them the martyr is what they fought for. Now, there are people who are givers, and they are givers to a fault. They are givers, and they do so often because they need reassurance that they themselves are lovable. So these are people who will try to find their lovability through giving to others. And because they need to see themselves as good people, they often spend more time talking about all the good they do than actually doing good. Think about the good people you know. How many good people do you know? I love to do this. I love to think about good people. I'm sitting here in a studio with two good people. I mean it, Linda Vanella, good person.
Thank you, Roman.
No, but it's true. I mean, whether you believe it or not, you better believe it. Do you know how much of a sacrifice I had to make to just say that about you?
But may I say, I think that when you think about someone who's good, there's that quiet giving. It's that sense that person sacrifices whatever they sacrifice without ever looking for accolades or ever looking for any attention. And I think that's what is the mark of what you would look at and say, gee, that person is really giving, and so far from what we're looking at as a martyrdom. Or there's no cause, there's no punishment, it's just a sense of self-pride and self-integrity.
If you use martyrdom as a negative.
Mm-hmm.
But if I say they are choosing to be martyrs, it's cool. Mm-hmm. But you're right about good people. I mean, Jana, who's in the studio, good person, right? We know that about Jana. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Good person, yeah. Well, maybe if you're a good person, you don't know how good a person you are. But here's the thing. How many people do you know that are good people? People who you know would not pick your pocket. People you know who would not betray you or betray anybody else for their own greed. How many people do you know? And I'm not talking about small cheats. I'm talking about people who really think that there's a level of fairness that should exist in this world and that they're going to be a part of the fair world as opposed to the unfair world. Well, I know a few hundred thousand of them who listen to WBAI and The Positive Mind. I get letters from them all the time. There are people who sound terrible when they write their letters on Facebook, but they're good folk, good folk. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be following this a little further and taking phone calls. We're talking about martyrdom, the whole idea of martyrdom. What does that quote say? Let me have that somebody sent me. Here's a nice quote that I got. This is by Dr. Seuss. We're all a little weird, and life's a little weird. And when we find someone whose weirdness is compatible with ours, we join up with them. And we fall in mutual weirdness, and we call it love. Thanks. We'll be right back, my friends. In case you don't recognize, it's Brent Lewis, Jungle Bells. Known Brent for a long, long time, a very talented, talented man. Same music for you every Christmas from me. Every time you're going to get the little Brent Lewis, because he's so unique and beautiful in his own way. 212-209-2900. We're talking about martyrdom, and we have a couple of more places to go with this. Here's my hypothesis. My belief is that a person who wants to be bigger than they are, who wants to be a different size, who spots something greater than they are, says, I want to join that greatness, and I am willing to take whatever self I had, which I find is insignificant, and make it and sacrifice it for the more significant. Whether that be a mother sacrificing for her parent, for a child, or a child sacrificing for its parent, or people sacrificing for a cause. Where that goes wrong is when the person who is doing it demands recognition for that work that they are doing. Now, in that recognition, suddenly their sacrifice is to be seen as different rather than being something different. You see, if you want to be part of something big, do something good. If you do good, you feel bigger. But if you do good and say, look how good I'm doing, then you're dependent on the other people to say you are doing good, and therefore you're smaller. So the idea here is that there's nothing wrong with martyrs. Let them be. We need them. You know, let hope they don't kill themselves. Hope they don't have to die in their struggle. And maybe you're a martyr in your own way. And that's fine, you know. But it's the guilt that goes on the other side that winds up being the thing that most people resent.
Armand, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I couldn't help but think of the Occupy Wall Street movement and the people that are fighting for that cause. And I mean, there's a clear opposition there. And are they martyrs? Because they're not, you know, they're, would you consider them martyrs?
Well, okay. You know, I don't know if it's up to me to put the label on them. It's not up to me to call them. I mean, whether you are or not a martyr, that's your own business. But I would think the following. There are some people who have nothing, and they give up nothing to do something. And then there are some people who have something who give up something to do something. It's two ways. It's two different ways. So let's say you're part of the 99% who's been stripped of your job, stripped of your home, stripped of your money, and then you get up there and you protest and you fight. Well, you're not really giving up anything because everything is gone and you're just trying to get it back, but that still doesn't mean you're not in the right place. And then there are the people who say, I stop. I won't be a part of this. In my life, I count maybe five times when I have stood up to be counted. The original time was, oh my God, look at my memory slipping, for the atom bomb originally in 1956. The Rothschilds, who were they? Not the Rothschilds, the family who was executed. Oh, I know it's going to come to me in a second. I was in high school. And there was this boy, and his mother and father were accused of selling nuclear secrets to Russia. Rosenbergs, that's who they were. So I'm going out of school, and here I am going out of the classroom with this kid who I know, who's a small kid. And the kids in the school wanted to club him to death because it made all the press. And I have no idea why, because it was so unlike me. But I said, you're going to have to go through me to get to him. And I felt it. I felt this, oh, no, you can't hurt him. He's a good guy. You can't hurt him for what, even if his parents did it or didn't do it. No, you're going to have to go through me. And it was the first time I ever felt that feeling. It's a wonderful feeling. Now, probably something symbolic was going on with some neurotic attachment that I probably had with my father earlier in life that manifested in this sudden desire to defend some poor kid, right, for something else. Probably, or it may have been my earlier unresolved feelings towards my parakeet. I have no idea what brought it about, but I do remember that feeling, and I've had that feeling since. I've had that feeling in Haiti. I've had that feeling in a number of other places that I've done. It's a feeling where you know what you're doing is right. And no thank yous necessary. The rest of the time, I love thank yous. Rest of the time, I want all the good news I can get. Sure, tell me you love me. Tell me you think I'm great. Send me nice letters. The rest of the time is great. But it's when I'm doing the real stuff that I think I'm doing my own. If it is martyrdom, martyrdom. And I've given up a lot. So I mean, I've also gotten a lot, so I don't want anybody to think that I'm any great hero. So in answer to your question, I think Occupy Wall Street has given the opportunity for many people to stand up for what they feel and believe in. And there are many people there who have gone beyond what you would expect. So I think it's a great example of us to see it. Did you have a question, Linda?
Well, I think of the people on Wall Street as certainly, you know, a wonderful opportunity, you know, to look at this and try to understand, you know, what martyrdom and the cause. And again, I think it's as you're describing, Armand, very eloquently, it's just looking at a higher being. It's looking at a higher state. Perhaps more enlightened or a different way, and I think it's an opportunity for us all to to understand, you know, what it takes for us, each and every one of us, as you describe that example. I know I've had one myself. When you really feel inside of you, deep inside of you, this feeling,
this is
of,
right,
you know, I want to stand up for something better, you know, and it's a wonderful opportunity.
This is better. Have you been there, Jana? Have you had those feelings in your life?
Sometimes. I mean, my family at times can be very, like, fractured or, you know, scattered, and I'm usually the one that brings everybody together, especially, like, around the holidays. Not so much the peacemaker, but, you know, I'm the one who brings everybody together, sometimes makes a big dinner, and I don't do it to get a thank you. I mean, I just do it because I like to see everybody together.
Crazy glue. That's what brings them together. Crazy glue. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. So we're looking at this, and maybe we're going to reframe this in some way. Let's take one of your calls. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Armando. How are you?
Oh, good. Nice to hear you, brother.
Feliz Navidad, Joy Noel, happy Kwanzaa. And for those who don't celebrate anything, hey, I love you anyway. Actually, why is it that when I'm listening to you, I don't just hear martyrdom, I hear, oh, maybe it's me, but persecution. Why is it, or maybe I'm getting it mixed up, why is it that a lot of people feel that they are being persecuted, so they have to go into the martyrdom syndrome? Like, for instance, a lot of people who are of different backgrounds, when they come to this country, they feel that, well, this is the land of milk and honey. And after they live here for a while, they find that it's just a complete opposite to what they've been told. And a lot of people, they feel that they are actually being persecuted because they because of the falsehood or the false ideologies of them coming here in the first place. And I find that a lot of people that I speak to, I just heard someone say, well, I'm going back home. I'm not going to come back here anymore. I'm fed up with it. I was lied to, and America is not the country I thought it was. Am I making any sense to you?
You're making a lot of sense to me. We did something at the very beginning of the program where I distinguished between persecution and martyrdom, and I talked about the element of it. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a lot of people feel like, you know, I'm just a small kid in a big game, and you're kicking me around, and I don't like being kicked around. Now, let's say you were somebody like you, you know, the person I know you to be, and you went to a place where there was an unfairness, a true unfairness, and you saw it as an injustice. And, for example, you're walking down the street, and three kids are beating up one kid. Now, you could easily say, I'm not going to get involved, but I know you better than that. You're involved.
You do know me. I always
That's
get
right.
Involved.
You are involved. Now, exactly. That is where you're not even figuring out whether you should or not. You're just saying, I got to throw my body into this, even if I get hurt. I can't let this take place. Now, that's one you. Then there's another you that says they're beating up those kids because that kid looks like me because everybody hates me. That's persecution. That's a different thing.
I see.
See? You're a beautiful man, and you're doing your usual good wishes at holidays, and I'm so glad you call in.
Okay, my brother, and remember my signature as usual. I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you, Armand?
Good.
This is, I have a quick question. I found that the martyrdom thing has kind of been rampant in my life, but more so like self-pity. And you know, as I've gotten older and a little wiser, I've realized that it's just really ego-driven, you know, and I think that I've been so, I think it's human nature, but I'm speaking for myself. I mean, we're, as humans, as people, we're so, or I am so narcissistic and ego-driven. And I think that it comes from there. It's founded there. And if you could see it, you could work on it. But if you don't accept it, you can't work on it.
So you used to be, let me ask you something. Were you and your narcissistic ego-driven self somebody who tended to present himself as a martyr?
Absolutely. I presented myself, but I saw the world that way. I'm very passive aggressive. I'm also a great guy, like you said, you know?
Yeah.
But everything I'm saying, I present it now from a positive point of view, though.
Oh, sure, I hear it. I hear it. Right. You're finally able to look in the mirror.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And the thing that's amazing about it, though, that now that I could see that, and I'm not saying it's right, oh, I'm right. But it's almost like I wish I didn't see it, because it just totally stops you from, or it stops me from sometimes, it's like a double-edged sword. It's almost like I can't enjoy TV, for example, because everything is so materialistic, so superficial. Do you get my point?
Sure.
It's almost like once you know, you can't go back.
That's not true. I think it's one of the positions you have to take at first.
Uh-huh.
Once you find, give an example, once you discover that, you know, meat is contaminated, you go on becoming a vegan, right? And then you wind up somewhere as a vegetarian. And then you're a vegetarian with a little, every now and then, a little piece of chicken.
Yes,
something works like that. But I think you have to have what's called the abreaction. If you are so aware of yourself as clearly you are, and if you're taking stock of yourself, the first thing you do is you say, I ain't going to do that no more. Then you wind up putting on television and learning how to skip the commercials. You know what I mean? You look at it again. You know how to do it as your own way. So at first, people usually have what's called an abreaction, which is a reaction to the other side. And then somewhere down the pike, as you get a little older, you settle somewhere in the middle in a nice, comfortable kind of way. And the good thing about the middle is there are more people there for you to teach. See, because someone like you has the talent to bring other people into your tent and talk to them. And if you reject too much, it just can't happen.
I appreciate that, and I'm really I'm close to that. You know,
I'm
close
to
that. I really do. You know, I think that, you know, I've learned so much from you. It really is amazing. I mean, actually, I never forget something you said about how, as humans, we need to be significant.
Yeah.
And that has kind of formed the way that I think also. You know, you really have context-changing insights through you. So I really appreciate that. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. You know, I couldn't do it without you. I need you to listen to whatever I'm saying on this side. I got microphones, but I need speakers and headphones on the other side. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Hey, I meant to say thank you to those people at St. Mark's. What was that guy's name?
Jason. And
right?
Grant.
Jason and Grant. Yeah, Jason and Grant, if you happen to be listening. Right? I went down for a little event to St. Mark's Church on 10th Street and 2nd Avenue the other day. Little event, right? So I'm down there, and a guy recognizes my voice, and he comes over, and he says, "Are you Armando Miller?" I said, "Yes." He says, "You're not going to believe it." He says, "My best friend, Jason, listens to every podcast you do or Grant does." So I said, "Well, bring him over and introduce him to me, but don't tell him who I am." So he brings Grant over, and he says, "Grant, I want you to meet this man." And I said, "I'm Armando Miller." The guy plotzed, right? He said. And he brought to me some stories about the significance of the positive mind in people's lives, not so much my stuff, but the very existence of this, and BAI's leaving this here on the air for as long as it's been here as a service to people. So to you two guys and your families, who I also met, whose names I forgot, my love to you, and thank you for coming over. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armando Miller. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
There's someone on the line, right?
Yes.
Thank you for picking up. My name is Debo Abdul Karim. I'm from West Africa, Ghana.
Uh-huh.
Please do well to, I'm talking about my accent. I'll do my best to let you understand me much better.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, earlier on during your show, you made mention of the Battle of Karbala, of which Ali, the fourth caliph of Islam, died. And I wanted to just do some correction there. He didn't just die during that battle. He died after. Yeah, he died in his mosque, but not in the battle. And second comment is that it's just throw up a little on the one of the colors whose signature is allowed, and you can do nothing about that.
How does that affect the perception of him? Was he a martyr?
If only I've understood your line of murder, I'll say yes, he is. He is.
And someone you admire?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah.
And I do religiously, you know.
And in your own life, are you someone that people admire?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And what makes them admire you?
Because of the good things I do. And I do not for them to like it, but that is me.
And what is a typical good thing you do that many people wouldn't do? And what's your first name, by the way?
My first name is Modibo, M-O-D-I-B-O.
Good, Modibo. Tell me something that you do that you think is an act of kindness that you don't ask recognition for, but you think that really touches other people.
Oh, yes. It's not financially and neither physically. It's kind of advice. I'm a guy who typically likes to advise people and who likes to preach. So in that way, they like me due to that.
And Modibo,
unlike others that show their kindness through giving, as you said. For an example, these holidays, you see people giving out gifts, you know, to show how modern that is, how good they are. I don't have money, but if you have an issue, I try to advise you as to how to deal with it.
But you don't just do that with your mind, Modibo. What I hear is that you're a man of great compassion, that you hear people and you know their need to be spoken to, and that if you have the advice, you give it. But I also believe that the best thing you do is accept people. And that goes back to your teacher. That goes back to your very greatest teacher. So I want to thank you for calling in and sharing that with us.
Thank you so much, too.
Modibo, my best to you.
Thank you so much.
Keep on talking.
Yes.
This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. What a gang. What a gang. Hey, listen, we are going to be back with you tomorrow. Tomorrow at 1 p.m. And we'll bring you more of this stuff. If you have any comments about martyrdom, you want to send them to me, send them to Armand@thepositivemind.com. Thanks, Jana, and thanks, Linda, for your help.